Welcome to the Connect Community Podcast, recorded live in Stamford, Connecticut. We're so glad to have you with us today. If you're ever in our area, come see us in person. We hope today's message inspires you and helps you live better.
Today is Palm Sunday. It's a significant day in the Christian calendar, and it marks the beginning of Holy Week, as we mentioned, when Jesus entered Jerusalem triumphantly. Palm Sunday was the pinnacle of Jesus' ministry, and it was the pinnacle of his fame. It was the pinnacle of his popularity. But Jesus' ministry didn't start in Jerusalem. It didn't start in Judea. It didn't start in the place where Jewish people benefited from political and religious privilege. Jesus' ministry began in Galilee, north of Judea, and that's where he was born and raised. And in Galilee, Greeks had gained influence in years past. So by the time Jesus was born, Galilee was seen by many religious leaders as a pagan area, a pagan region, a region that was influenced by outsiders, by foreigners. And that's where Jesus's ministry began, in a culturally ambiguous area, a region that had influences from all parts of the world. And it wasn't really to his advantage as a Jewish man to be in Galilee, because he was not good enough for Galileans, because Galileans were influenced by the Greek who rejected the Jewish religion. And he wasn't good enough for the true, pure Jewish people from Judah, from Jerusalem. And the Jewish people from Jerusalem kind of looked down on Galileans, thinking that they were not pure, that they were influenced, by foreigners. But that's where Jesus' ministry began. In this amalgam, this melting pot of cultures and different people. And Jesus' ministry began about between two to three years before Palm Sunday. And one of Jesus' first miracles happened as a response of somebody's generosity to Jesus. Jesus was by the Sea of Galilee, on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, and he was pressed by the crowd. There was a crowd that wanted to hear from him, and as he was on the shores of the sea, he was looking to communicate to them. So he noticed that there were a couple of fishermen with their boats docked, and Jesus asked one of the fishermen to use their boat. Now, he wasn't trying to get away from the crowd. He was trying to get on the boat because voice carries over water. And for him to teach from the boat, a little bit further from the water, he could just speak at a normal voice and everybody on the shore would be able to hear him well. Now, the boat owner was a man named Simon, a man that centuries later, or maybe even decades later, would be known as Saint Peter. But Simon was no saint. Simon was, at least not in the sense that he was perfect or holy, Simon was very aware of his shortcomings. He was very aware of his faulty nature. And so was Jesus. Jesus was aware of it as well. But Jesus approached him anyway. And Simon was generous to Jesus. He allowed Jesus to use his boat. He allowed Jesus to use his resource. And in this way, he supported Jesus' ministry. No doubt Jesus saw this as an offering, an act of faith. Because after Jesus finished teaching, he noticed that Simon was dejected because he didn't have a good morning. He had gone out for a catch of fish. And Jesus asked Simon, why don't you go out again for another catch? And it seemed odd to Simon that Jesus would advise him, since he was a professional fisherman. And so Simon told Jesus, Jesus, we already went. We already went out. And we caught nothing. And you could tell that Simon might have been frustrated because he worked all night. He told Jesus, we toiled all night and came back empty-handed. Maybe you can relate today. Maybe You might be in a situation where you know exactly what this means. You might know what you do. You might be like Simon, and you might have applied effort in your life to do everything right. You followed the science, right? You work to be knowledgeable about something, to perform it properly. But then in the end, it didn't quite work out. You got terrible results. That was Simon. That was Simon's situation, Simon's circumstance. A skilled fisherman, frustrated. But because Jesus asked him to go, he decided to go. He said, out of respect for you, on your word, Jesus, we will go. And he went out, and he and his brother Andrew went for a catch. And they caught so much fish, the boats could barely handle it. Simon realized this was a miracle. What just happened is impossible. And so at that moment, at the sight of what just happened, realizing that Jesus had just performed a generous miracle toward him, he fell at Jesus' knees, as scripture says. And this is what he said, Luke chapter 5, verse 8, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." This is Simon's encounter with Christ. This is how his relationship with Christ began. And I believe this is a prime example of the kind of awakening that happens in the hearts and the minds of those who encounter God for the first time. When you catch a glimpse of God, and some of you can relate to this because this has happened to you. Like Simon, you might have been toiling through life, working your skill, working your craft, pushing forward, trying your best in your own strength, but not succeeding. And then for a moment, you noticed the presence of the divine. You caught a glimpse of the presence of God. And you paid attention to it. And like Simon, you turned your attention to God. And the hand of God showed up in your life. That's how it happens. God finds us preoccupied with life, going about our business, and he's trying to catch our attention. He's trying to teach us something. He's trying to draw us to him. And if we are willing to notice, if we are willing to open our awareness to his presence, then he shows his presence and he shows his power. And maybe you experienced that, a moment of God's presence in your life, and because of it, your life was spared. Because of it, your business took off. Because of it, you found love in an unlikely way. Because of it, you connected to the presence of God in a fresh way. You don't know how. You don't know why. You don't know the reason. But it's a moment like Simon's. You experienced God. And that encounter was the beginning of Simon Peter's relationship with Jesus. From that moment on, he became Jesus' inseparable apprentice. He was stuck to him like glue, like the song says. Wherever Jesus went, there was Simon. In fact, Jesus went to Simon's house. And when he got to Simon's house, he learned that Simon's mother-in-law was sick. So Jesus healed her. And when she was healed and the fever left her body, she got up and started serving them, got them dinner. They were together all the time. Jesus and Simon were together in moments of joy and in moments of despair. Like the one time when Jesus wanted to pray and he told his disciples to row across the Sea of Galilee. And it must have been a full moon night and a windy night because Jesus went up on a hill to pray. And as he was on the hill, he could see far off the disciples on the boat trying to make way across the Sea of Galilee. And with much pain and effort, they were fighting the waves for about 3 hours. And finally, Jesus sees that they are now fearing for their lives because they can't make headway. It's too far for them to come back. And Jesus can see from the top of the hill. And so Jesus decides to go down from the hill and walk toward them. And so Jesus is walking on water toward the disciples. And at first, they thought they were seeing a ghost. They got scared. But when they realized it was Jesus, when they realized it was the Lord, Simon, before Jesus could get on the boat, said, wait, Jesus, call me to you. Let me come to you on water as well. I want to do what you're doing. This seems cool. And so Jesus looks at Simon and says, come. And he steps out of the boat with his eyes fixed on Jesus. And he begins to walk on water. He begins to walk toward Jesus on water. But then all of a sudden, he notices the waves. He notices the wind. And he begins to sink. And Jesus saves him. Jesus took him by the hand, got him up. They went back to the boat. And Jesus calmed the storm. Simon knew Jesus. They were together. He knew Jesus' nature. In fact, on one occasion, Jesus was inquiring from his disciples about his fame. He knew that his name was being talked about. And Jesus inquired to them, basically asking, what's the word on the street? What are people saying about me out there? How are they identifying me? And they said, well, some people say that you have the spirit of John the Baptist. Others say that you have the spirit of Elijah. Some say that you have the spirit of Jeremiah. And so Jesus looks at them and says, what do you say? You've been walking with me. You're closer to me than anybody else. Who do you say that I am? And I imagine Peter's excitement at the question. I imagine that like a fifth grader who wants to answer every question right, he must have slipped up his hand and said, me, I know this one. He looks at Jesus and says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus is moved. To that, Jesus answered Matthew chapter 16, verses 17 through 19. This is what Jesus says. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. This was so significant. This was a powerful moment, a revelation. In fact, Jesus told them, hey, don't tell anybody that I am the Christ. But this moment right here, many scholars believe, including the Catholic Church, believe that this was the moment Jesus ordained Peter to be the head of the church after his ascension. Many believe that this is the moment where Jesus said, Peter, you're going to lead my church. You're going to become the rock that will head my church. And this was the first time that Jesus called Simon Peter. The first time. What a promise he received that day. Now, a week or so after that, Jesus took Peter and James and John to a mountain. And there they had a vision. Jesus was transfigured into a glorified body. And he was joined by Moses and Elijah. This is significant because Moses represented the law and Elijah represented the prophets. And those are the two supreme authorities for Jewish people, the law and the prophets. And Jesus is now centered amongst them. He's the centerpiece between these two significant people. Simon sees that. And he's so taken by this display. He's so taken by this moment. This moment is so powerful that he tells Jesus, I have an idea. How about we build three tents? And you guys can live here in these three tents. We'll take care of all your needs. But before he could finish that request, a voice from heaven was heard saying, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him." When the three disciples heard the voice, they fell to the ground with their face to the ground. And so Jesus came to them and touched them. And when they lifted up their head, nothing was there anymore. It was just Jesus telling them, "Rise. And don't tell anybody about this vision that you just had until after my death and resurrection." Peter was with Jesus in every single moment. Simon was close to Jesus. He participated in everything. He was Jesus' trusted friend. He was with Jesus in every single moment. That's why when Jesus told Simon Peter at the Garden of Gethsemane that he would deny him, it was a shock. Simon fiercely opposed the idea. This is how the scripture puts it. This is how Matthew tells the story. Matthew chapter 26, verses 30 through 35. "And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Then Jesus said to them, 'You will all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee.' Peter answered him," listen to the words of Peter, "'though they all fall away because of you.'" He's pointing to the other disciples. He's pointing at the other friends that were right there. "Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same. They all said, yeah, what Peter said. "We will die with you, Jesus." Such passion. Such love, such connection, such devotion. They were close. They were together. But that same night, and in that same place, Judas came to meet Jesus with a mob of Jewish people and Roman soldiers. They had clubs, they had swords, and they seized Jesus. And Jesus surrendered without resistance. He simply surrendered. And this was Jesus' response to the crowd. Matthew chapter 26, verse 55 to 56. "And at that hour, Jesus said to the crowds, 'Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs to capture me? Day after day, I sat in the temple teaching, and you did not seize me. But all this has taken place, that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled.'" Now listen to this. "Then all the disciples left him and fled." They all left him and fled. They all ran for their lives, including Simon Peter, at the sight of what was happening. But Peter loved Jesus too much to not be somewhat involved. So he couldn't stay away. He observed from a distance. He followed them to the place where Jesus was being interrogated. And he stayed on the courtyard outside, observing, anxious, hoping to hear what was happening. And then this happened, verse 69 of the same chapter. "Now Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came up to him and said, 'You also were with Jesus, the Galilean.' But he denied it before them all, saying, 'I do not know what you mean.' And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, 'This man was with Jesus of Nazareth.' And again, he denied him with an oath, 'I do not know the man.' After a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, 'Certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you.' The way you speak betrays you. The way you carry yourself shows that you are with him. Then he began to invoke a curse on himself. Things got serious. He began to swear. He changed the way he was speaking. He changed his speech to convince them that he wasn't a friend of Jesus. "I do not know the man," Peter says. And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the saying of Jesus, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly. Could you imagine? Simon Peter went from a personal calling on the shores of the Sea of Galilee to witnessing and performing miracles, including his own family, to walking on water, to seeing Jesus glorified, to having a revelation of who Jesus was, the Messiah, having his feet washed by Jesus, to denial, a real betrayal. And now Peter is broken. He's brokenhearted at his own actions. What seemed to Peter like a bitter end. I don't know if you've ever felt like that. Have you ever felt like that? Like you have missed the shot? Like you have wasted your chance? Like you failed at what matters most? I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you looked at yourself in the mirror and you thought, "How could you? How could you do that?" Here's Peter finding himself in the same place. He was at the very beginning of his encounter with Jesus, the same place, feeling like, "Depart from me, for I'm a sinful man, O Lord." After all that time, after all the time they spent together, his first statement to Jesus continued to be true. Have you ever gotten tired of dealing with the same issue? Have you ever been in a situation where you were just tired of dealing with the same thing? Confessing the same sin, having the same conversations over and over again, having to address the same thing with your parents or your spouse, having to have the same conversation because of the same shortcoming, because of the same pitfall. Have you ever gotten tired of it? Not just even tired of the thing, but tired of the repetition. Here I am again fighting the same thing. That was Peter. See, the thoughts that persist are thoughts of defeat. Maybe I should just quit. Maybe I should just walk away. Maybe this is the end. Maybe I shouldn't continue. It's your own version of saying, "God, depart from me. I'm a sinful person." It's your own version of saying, "God, depart from me because I'm a liar. Depart from me, God, because I'm a cheater. Depart from me, God, because I can't have a relationship with you. I'm a sinner. I have this thing. I have this thing that keeps taking me off course." See, most of us, when we compare ourselves to other people, especially if you're here in church on Sunday morning, you feel like you're a good person. Most of us, we live in this dichotomy that compare to others, compare to the world, compare to the headlines. Yeah, we're good people. But when the light's out, and you're by yourself, and your head is on the pillow, and you start thinking about your actions, what you could have done, what you should have done, the commitments you failed, the things that you promised yourself you would do, the things that you promised yourself you weren't going to do and you ended up doing. And you run through every single reason why there's no way that God should ever listen to you. There's no way that God should ever bless you or be even in your life in any favorable way. See, the story of Peter is the story of us. Peter walked with Jesus. He knew Jesus. He had a relationship with Jesus, and he failed him. He turned his back on him. And maybe you feel like in a way you've turned your back on God. Maybe you feel like in a way you've denied the faith. You're not living up to it. Maybe you feel like you've been disqualified. Or maybe you disqualified yourself because of something you did or something you said. I want you to look at Peter. Because Peter's story didn't end with denial. See, after Jesus was crucified and after Jesus resurrected, Peter's life came full circle. Peter's life came full circle. Peter decided to go back to fishing. He counted himself out. He thought, I'm out. And a few disciples joined him. And so as they were trying to catch fish, they were trying to throw their nets out, and then they saw a man on the shore, far away, asking them, hey, have you caught anything? And they replied, no, nothing. We haven't caught anything. And so it was Jesus on the shore from a distance who tells them, hey, let your nets down on the other side. Try the other side. And when they did, the nets were filled with fish. And so John looked at Peter and said, it's the Lord. And Peter was so moved. It was a poetic moment for Peter because it was a new beginning. It was like the same encounter they had at first. When he realized he was Jesus, he jumped in the water and he swam to the shore. He ran to Jesus. And when he got to the shore, Jesus had some charcoal, a little fire ready to grill some fish because he knew they were going to catch some. And so he asked from some of the fish they caught, and they had breakfast on the beach together. Listen to the scripture in John 21, verses 15 through 17. And David, you can come in now. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend to my sheep. Jesus said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he had said to him the third time, do you love me? And so Peter said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Jesus was reaffirming his position. Jesus was reinstating Simon. See, some of you, you've been preoccupied with life. And you've been in your feelings a little bit too much. Because you still think this is about you. You still think you're here today because of you. You still think your prayers are about you. You still think your relationship with God is about you. And I say this respectfully and in love, but you will never enter God's plan for your life if you remain in your feelings. You got to get out of your feelings. If you think this is about you trying to figure yourself out, you're going to run in circles. You got to get beyond yourself. And this was the moment where Peter understood. You know, I was holding my baby on Friday. He's 18 months now, but he looks like he's 3. He's a large baby. It's staggering. But I'm holding him. Kinda. And he wasn't feeling too good. He was fighting a little bug, and so I held him because he doesn't sleep on us. If we hold him, he doesn't fall asleep. But on Friday, he was, you know, a little down, and so I took the opportunity to have a moment with him. And as I watched him, you know, dozing off, trying to fight and stay awake in my arms, I started thinking about all the potential that was in my arms. All the things that he will do, all the things that he will be able to do, the capacity, the talents, the ability, and the kind of man that he can become, and the things that he's meant to accomplish. And my part in that, my role in his life. Now, here's my fourth child. We've been blessed. And we had three daughters before him. And I did the same thing with them when they were little. You know, just imagining their future. And here's what I come to realize. And this might be a little bit shocking for you if you're a parent. But I realize that my children will never love me as much as I love them. They simply won't. You know the book, Guess How Much I Love You, with the little nut brown hair? First time I read it, I thought, man, this dad or mom is just showing them off, you know? Every time the kid says they love him this much, they say, no, and I love you this much. Let the kid have, you know, his win. But that book is actually profound because it speaks of a profound truth. And this is how I realized that my kids will never love me as much as I love them. Because when my eldest was born, she turned 13 last week, by the way. So she's no longer a child. But when she was born 13 years ago, and I held her in my arms, I had an experience unlike any experience I've had before. If you've become a parent, you know. Because as I held her, I could not comprehend how much I loved that baby. And I got home that night. My parents were living in Brazil, and I called my dad and I asked him, "You love me this much?" I had no idea. I had no idea you loved me this much. I felt like my heart expanded. See, I love my wife with all my heart. And before we had our first baby, I thought, man, am I going to have to share this love? Am I going to have to make some room in my life and kind of like push my wife to the side a little bit? Make room for my kid? But I realized that that's not what happens. It's like my heart grew. And suddenly, there's more love. So as I held my baby boy in my arms on Friday, I felt the voice of God in my spirit, not out loud, but just down in here, a strong sense of the voice of God say, you know, it was never about Peter's shortcomings. We make it about ourselves. We make it about our sin. We make it about our position. We make it about our thing. But it was never about Peter becoming a better version of himself. Sure, that happened. It was part of the process. It was about the love of the Father. It was about what the love of the Father does to someone who's willing to receive it. See, that was a powerful conversation Jesus had with Peter. Jesus said, Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, I love you. Then feed my sheep. Care for them. My children are hurting. My children are dying. They're hopeless. And I can't imagine the love of the Father looking at Peter and saying, hey, there's so many more people like you. Get away. Get out of yourself. Get out of your own feelings. There's so many people like you who feel like they're not good enough. Like they failed. Like they're apart from God. Like they're disqualified. It was always about Peter's willingness to care for God's children. And that's what our relationship with God is about. That's why he endured what he endured. Listen, you will never love God as much as God loves you. And some of you parents, you understand this dichotomy. You will never love God as much as he loves you. That's what Jesus was telling Peter. It's okay, Peter. You turned your back on me, it's okay. I love you more. You sinned against me, it's okay. I love you more. And you may feel the same way, like you have turned your back on God, like you're not good enough. Like even, I mean, you don't have to look too far. This week, you might feel like you did things that disqualified you from God's presence, that disqualified you from His promises for your life, that disqualified you from His plan for your life. But I'm here to tell you today, God loves you more than you love Him. And that's good news. He loves you way more than you love Him. So if you've sinned, if you've fallen away, if you feel like you didn't have the best week or that your life is a mess right now, just know that the love of the Father is ready to receive you, to embrace you, and to partake with you, and to give you a purpose, to use you to bless others. Don't count yourself out based on your own shortcomings. You may have turned your back on God. You may have doubted His presence. You may have taken yourself out of the game. But like Peter, know today that even though you might have denied Him, God does not deny you. He welcomes you. He loves you. And He wants to bring you back to life. Do you receive it this morning?
Thank you for listening today. If you have a prayer request, a question about faith, or would like to find out more information, visit us at connectcommunity.org. Don't forget to subscribe and share. See you next time.